hope you are in that seat and buckled in real tight. We're going to go for another ride and smash that loud pedal here on In the Groove.
I fooled him again, and we are back for another episode of In the Groove podcast. Guys, last week was a ball. It was so fun that I even have a returning guest again, and I've got a newcomer. Man, I hope you're ready for it tonight. Like I said, I got a returning guest on here tonight, my friend, my colleague, just the guy, Chris Ruhr, the guy that makes me make t-shirts. Chris, how is it going tonight?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I am glad that you're back on here. Another episode of In the Groove podcast with you, Chris Ruhr. For everybody that is wondering, we are making Dirt Track Racing great again. And if you want one of those t-shirts, please let us know. All because of the man, the myth, the legend, the Chris Ruhr, a.k.a. Fluffy, the track god, as I call him. But hey,
the track god,
you're making those tracks fast. So I got to say, Chris, we kind of played around with this idea of you coming on to the weekly podcast and kind of having a debate because I'm a drag racer and we've talked about that. Everyone that listens actually knows. But when you come on, it seems like you bring heavy hitters with you.
I try.
I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe, you know, I don't know. But this guy, I honestly don't think he needs any introduction. He's known around the IMCA, around the North Dakota ranks. I really don't know what to say. Is there any way you would announce this guy?
He's a Turtle Lake legend.
Ooh.
He's very important in his own mind, that's for sure.
Hey, don't get ahead of yourself. That is something that I think we might have to talk about. But hey, you know what? I'm just going to do it. A guy who wanted to come on here, tell his story as a driver, and just, you know, explain himself and maybe have to explain why his head may be bigger than mine. I want to bring on my friend and your friend, Isaac Sandro, the 12S machine of Isaac Sandro. How's it going tonight?
Man, for being invited, I feel very victimized right now.
Oh, no. Hey, that's one thing that you got to know about this place. There is no shots fired or anything like that. Hey, like I said, shit just happens here on this podcast.
Oh, man, it's good to be on. You guys are awesome. This is good. All right.
Everybody that doesn't know, Isaac, the 12S machine, just tell us about yourself. You know, give everybody a little story about you.
Well, man, apparently I talk about myself too much. I don't know. Grew up in the racing family here in Turtle Lake, North Dakota. My grandpa Harry raced for years, was a car owner, racer. He had some pretty good dudes driving for him back in the day. He got in a bad sprint car accident in the 70s. Then he had Hank Albers and Danny Schatz and those guys driving for him for a while. Then he owned a modified for a while. And Mike Tomlinson and late model for a while, Paul Schultz drove it. And then my Uncle Troy took over for him, and then we've been at the races since the early 60s. Him and my grandma started way back then, and since I was a kid, that's the old Lindsay Lawson line. I've been going to the races since I was zero, man. I was born in April. I was going to the races by Memorial Day weekend in 1990, so we grew up at the racetrack, and I don't think there's a better place to grow up. So in 2012, we started doing our own racing deal. My uncle kind of retired and kind of keep the family tradition going, I guess, and here we are, so.
And so you speak of that, you know, 90s, baby. You know, congratulations on being a part of the greatest tradition of kids in the 90s. Sorry, Fluff, if you're not a part of that. But 90s babies, we are, you know, the best kids. Youngin. I can't say that.
We are young.
Hey.
I don't know. We're just
bringing
30. It's kind of a midlife crisis.
Oh, I know. Hey,
we call you rookie.
Oh, here we go with the rookie jokes. But I can attest to that there, Isaac. I'm going to be 30 here in December, and I'm really not looking forward to it. There's some times when you wake up, you roll over, and you're like, if this is what old feels like, I really don't want to keep getting any young, you know, don't want to get any older. If I can get younger, I'd go back. But we could talk about that. But one thing that I do want to talk about, Isaac, because, you know, it is still the cat that's in the room. Everybody's still worried about it. And to you, Chris, also, how has this season been for you guys? You know, I know, Chris, you answered the question before on the podcast, but for you, Isaac, how has it been for you knowing, you know, with the short season and with all the stuff being closed and we didn't have that many fans? Was it different? Was it a different feel for you in the pits or in the, you know, going to the racetrack? Was that different for you with everything that was going on this year?
You know, I guess from my point of view, going to the races during all of this pandemic deal felt normal. You noticed some things, like when you're signing in at some different racetracks or doing the online registration, that was a different deal. Or, you know, early in the season, they didn't want you congregating in different pit stalls and stuff. But being at the races, it felt like a little piece of normal that we weren't getting in real, you know, in the real world outside of the racetrack, you know. So that was kind of nice, you know. And then personally for me, with spring's work being so crazy at the farm, not racing during May actually benefited us a little bit this year, which is, you know, it sucked. I mean, we would have made the races in May, but it was a little bit less chaos for my team to get there in May. So that was kind of nice. And then we still got, you know, we got our 30 shows in and got to do quite a bit of traveling this summer. And when we were traveling, we hit Ada and Fargo a couple of times at Grand Forks, and it's crazy to see the difference of how they were handling it, the COVID deal, from the Western racetracks to the Eastern racetracks. But, you know, from our standpoint as a family, it just felt normal to get back to track. It was almost good for us. I think it kept us a little bit sane after this quarantine and pandemic crap.
Definitely did, right? I mean, it felt good to finally have something to do. I know for myself, it was kind of very awkward for me leaving Florida in March in the middle of it as a drag race, and then coming home, and then all of a sudden the next drag race that I was potentially going to get hired to go to got shut down. And now I'm like, what do I do? Thank God I've already kind of had everything and the ball rolling for the podcast. And then it kind of opened the doors of that. And then that's what included the Out of 3 and 4, which we did get the interview with you, you know. And we might as well tell everybody up here, what do we call that drink that we crack? I just saw Fluffy drinking them. Isaac, you said it on your Out of 3 and 4. What is that called for everybody that doesn't know?
It's pop.
It's pot, right? Because if you and I kind of thought about it, and the more I think about it, yeah, if you leave one of those in your car in the middle of winter, what is it going to do? It's going to pop. So I think that's where that name came from. Going over talking points of what we're going to talk about tonight. Big thing with you, Isaac, is that one, I noticed that ugly purple and yellow color in the back there when you're sitting there. So we won't discuss too much of that. We don't want to hurt your feelings, but then there looks like there's a great picture on the back of your door. It's like those aren't talking points. I just brought those up. One thing, you had a couple of big wins. You went down to Grand Forks and you had a big win. Definitely want to talk about having the Lawson, you know, having him in your pits and the knowledge that he brings to you guys. And then also definitely want to talk about, I heard that you're kind of the center of attention sometimes when things happen. So we won't say too much about that, but we will get into
Isaac's world. We just live in it.
We will get into those talking points. Mad Bro Motorsports, located North Hill, Minot, North Dakota, the leading performance and parts store. If there's anything you need for your hot rod, give Slam and Sam and the gang a call. 701-720-7996. Again, that is Mad Bro Motorsports. 701-720-7996.
On the way to being free.
So here we are thinking about everything, getting into it, but definitely Isaac, bringing that straight back to you. First question, is that big win there for you in Grand Forks, you know, towards the end of your season, you kind of had a really kind of shaky season compared to other ones. You know, like I said, it was a different season for you and for everybody else involved. So how was that for you, adjusting to it, understanding, and then going to Grand Forks and taking that big win?
Yeah, it was, you know, we had a really good start this season, and then we had kind of a crappy middle of the season. Then we had a pretty good end of the season. So it was, you know, it was just kind of building consistency with this car. And for whatever reason, I seem to, as a driver, adapt a little bit better to bullrings, the short tracks. And I don't know if it takes a little bit of the motor deal out, or a little bit of the newer technology in cars. So I kind of got an older car or whatever that can be a little bit more technical in those bullrings or those short tracks. And it just worked out, that Grand Forks deal, that in the heat race, I blew it off the top, and we got back into a transfer spot after I blew it off, and that was big. And then they did a redraw, automatic redraw. It put us inside row two. I felt pretty good about that, going down to the bottom, and thought I could ditch bang my way around for a while. And then opening quarter, there was kind of a melee. One of the dudes from Fargo kind of just blew it in way too deep and piled up the field, and we were lucky enough to drive away from it. And then that, you know, that put us on the pole. And about four or five laps in, I thought, God dang, the car's pretty good. And then we just kind of kept digging the bottom and just kept getting better and better. I got behind a lapper, and I kind of thought I messed it up there, and we just kept clicking away. And then with three or four to go, I got back to the leader, and I thought, you know, going up to this deal at the Grand Forks, like, it's the bull ring, it's Grand Forks. Like, I didn't expect to go up there and win. There was some pretty good cars there, and I just thought, God dang, it'd be cool to race there once in my life. I just wanted to go up there and race once. And then things worked out in our favor, and we rolled around that place pretty good and ended up winning the deal. So it was just kind of a bucket list thing just to go. And then to win was just kind of a ridiculous cherry on top, to be honest. I didn't, you know, there's nights that through my career where, you know, the car's been good and you felt pretty good, like you had a chance to win at wherever you showed up. I didn't really expect that in Grand Forks, and they just kind of found me, and God dang, it felt pretty damn good, to be honest. So.
And I know that's one thing that Chris, you know, that Fluff, he was definitely excited about that win for you. So, Fluff, what did that mean? Because I know you're a big fan, right? I mean, some of these guys that we might have on, you might not be fans of, but having some people are going to say this wrong, but having a hometown hero go down to Grand Forks and run that way, how did you feel about that, Fluff, seeing him do that?
Oh, Isaac's completely underselling it. To win in Grand Forks is a huge deal to anybody in any class. That track is it's the hardest and best one in our state by far. Like, when it comes to racetracks, Grand Forks is on another level. Tony Gibson, the World Outlaws announcer, I mean, he's literally been to every dirt track in the country, and he calls River City Speedway his favorite track in the country. I mean, it's unreal. That place is, the fact that you can go there and win, and with the competition that's there, it's amazing. And I was so pumped for Isaac. It was unreal. I think the only person more excited about Isaac winning in Grand Forks than me and his family was probably Eric Laudenschlager, who was also in that race. He was super pumped that Isaac won that deal.
Yeah.
But I literally jumped up and down when I heard he won. I loved every bit of it, and I wish I would have been there, but we're called. But.
Yeah. When we got in our cars for the feature, he said, hey, let's finish 1-2. And just knowing Eric, I think he, you know, he wanted me to finish second in the 1-2. So, no, it was cool, man. Like I said, I've been up there 100 times to watch Outlaws and stuff. And it was, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I had to pull it together. I was crying when I got to Victory Lane and stuff, because it's hard enough to win at any of these places. So to win there, I got a little emotional. I'm kind of a softie, so it happens. So.
No, and that's fine. What's up?
If Isaac likes to cry in his race car, he would make a great drag racer, would he not?
Oh, what do you mean? Okay, see, now here we go. See, I, like I said, I was going to play nice tonight.
You love the drama, and you know it.
But here we go. Here we go. Hey, Sam, what are you trying to say there, Fluff?
Sam, you know the best nap I've ever had?
What was that?
I was about 10 years old, and the drag races were going on at Motor Magic, and I snuck over there, and my buddy was racing, and he raced once, and then we waited 6 hours till he raced again. It was the best nap I ever had in between, though, man.
Hey,
this is so good.
Like I've told Fluff many a times, this would be the perfect area for him because we could have lunch. We could have a steak in between rounds. You know, there's no tire grinding. There's no, you know, changing all this and angle bars and not. No. Hey, we set the car up. We pull it out of the trailer. We wipe it off. We'd make a test pass, come back. You got 45 minutes to an hour until you can do it again. Make sure the battery.
Wander to the east side of the fence.
You see, I'm not. Well, we're not going to talk about there and Minot, but I mean, there's other tracks that we can definitely talk about. But so I've never been to Grand Forks. So comparable, let me know. Comparable Grand Forks to Jamestown. What is that like? Because for me, seeing Minot, Williston, and everything like that, and then now going to Jamestown for the tour last year, I thought. I mean, Jamestown, some of those cars are getting up in there and getting it. So how do you guys feel? I mean, does Jamestown compare to Grand Forks? I mean, I'm walking into this situation blind here.
I know, Fluff. I would kind of say it's maybe you agree. It's a combination of maybe a Williston and Jamestown. It's between the shape and the banking. The place, the Grand Forks got so much banking. They actually cut some of it down off the top because the place is so stupid fast up top that the sprint cars are running like 9 second laps around that joint. And so it's got so much banking to it. And yet it was way more, I had to use way more brake than I thought. I thought it was gonna be a back it in, hammer down, set it and go. And it was both feet for most of the feature, but it has a D shape that a Williston does, but it has the cup banking like a 1 and 2 in Jamestown does. But that's how I'd compare it to Fluff. I don't know what you would think, but that's kind of what I thought.
That's exactly how I'd put it too. I mean, it's a high banged, wide open like Jamestown, but it's got that B wild cheap kind of like a Williston.
So I got to ask there, Fluff, if you are the guy in the tractor before the race, how are you setting that track up then? You know, it's totally different, right? Setting each track up, something that doesn't have as much bank. You know, my not, I think when I first start going there, holy, like, you come over on the golf cart and you're like, yep, I'm going to tip, you know, and now you guys have done great things down there and changed a lot of things up. So do you think you prep that track a little different because of the situation and because of the banking, or do you think you still prep that the same?
Oh, wow. It's Grand Forks. You got to prep the top, be the fast side. You want a cushion up there. That's what makes that place so much fun to watch it. The Fluffy boys flying around on the top side.
Fluffy would have tears of joy if he got to work with that dirt every week. Red River gumbo, man. You can just, you work it a little bit, add a little water, and that thing is prime. They got it made out there.
See, so now.
Guys told me they water it twice a day.
Yeah.
They put water on it twice a day. I do it 100 times a day.
Yeah.
See, so now we can talk about that, right? That's different talking points right there, because we in Minot, from what I can tell from going other places and seeing a lot of other races, we have different dirt, you know, and other places have clay. Some people have this or that. So you, Isaac, going into a situation like that, or you, Chris, you know, going to say someone called and say, hey, can you come help us out for a weekend? And you were able to get away and do that. Does that change so much more?
Oh, yeah. Every track's different. You got to look at the dirt and what you're working with. Every clay is different. Each track is clay, but you got to be able to see the dirt and know what it's doing. I mean, that's part of being in the construction world, I guess, is where I've learned that every dirt's different, from clay to topsoil to, I mean, even gravel. Each different classes of each type of grade of soil are different.
And what about?
I think what Nodak fought, and I think Fluffy's got a great handle on Nodak right now, but since the flood at Nodak, the dirt has been different. Like, where Fluffy and I grew up watching that deal at Nodak, it's a different dirt since the flood either flipped the track or the same dirt didn't come back to the racetrack after the flood. But Nodak itself has changed so much more in the decade than they did the first 3, 4, 5 decades of racing at that place. So that's it's crazy, not even from track to track, but just how a track over its history of the dirt just keeps changing at the place.
So you as a racer then, Isaac, what surface would you prefer? Like, if you could go out and have your perfect race car set up, your perfect dirt, what would that be for you?
I don't know. Like, it's always fun to have grip. I know that. And but I've had success on some dry slick stuff too, because like I said, it takes the motor out a little bit, and that's helped us a little bit. And so I've had some luck on both. After racing in forks, I'd say that's the ideal. There's strips of moisture. There's a berm on the top and bottom. I don't care what the surface looks like. I don't care if it's got character, rough, smooth, whatever. Two lanes. That's all a driver wants. They want an opportunity to go somewhere else, you know. And, hey, man, my whole career, people have made fun of me for being in the ditch. And this year, this car does not like the ditch. And so there's pictures to prove it finally. Isaac Sandro ran the top for most of 2020, especially at Nodak Speedway where it got a little thin on nights. And so two lanes, that's all I say, Sam. If you give us two lanes and if I can't go forward, then it's my freaking problem. So
well, most people refer to a one-lane racetrack as what? A parade.
Yeah.
And Marlon Korsley, the Nodak Speedway Hall of Fame guy, he told me one time, he said, Fluff, the only time someone likes a parade is when there's candy. And there ain't no candy when we're doing it here. So.
No, I mean, you know, and I'm going to bring it to the drag racing world. There's different tracks that we go over. And, of course, you being in the concrete world, Fluff, you can attest to this. Some things may be poured one way and some things, you know, you may have a transition halfway down the track. And if it's not a, you know, clean pour or something like that. So we have to adjust even as drivers in the drag racing world, even though you guys think we, you know, hold our martini glasses and just drive down the track and let, you know, the car do all the work. We have to drive it too. And especially into the class that I'm in now with the grudge racing, the no prep scene, that's totally different. I mean, you can get out there one day and, you know, the road, which we never race on roads, whoever's listening to this, the track that we're racing on, you know, it may be 80 degrees that whole week. So the track is nice and warm and, you know, everything is sticking and you do your burnout and you've got good heat in your tires. Well, now you go down to something that's been, you know, 30, 40 degrees at night and you're doing longer burnouts and everything like that. So, I mean, granted, we don't burn tires as fast as you guys do, which that's something I believe that needs to change. But I don't want anyone from IMCA calling me saying, hey, you can't say that, or, you know, I get banned from a track because those tires, you guys are using recycled pop bottles. I mean, those things are ridiculous. I've seen better tires on a Fisher Price, you know, kids toy. But I mean, like I said, I'm not going to get into that.
Another can of worms.
That exactly. I mean, that's something that I will let Chris Ruhr handle, and he can bark up that tree. I like a good thing that I got going here, but I do like a little bit of controversy. So I mean, whoever's listening on that, but I mean, especially you, Isaac, right now, you're kind of in a sticky situation. You got a car for sale. You know, like you said, you battled some stuff in the middle of the season, and now you're pulling off some big wins at the end. So does that kind of change your mind a little bit with, you know, having that car for sale? Or is it, nope, we're done, we're moving on?
Yeah. So, like, I'm really bad about selling things. Like, I have my high school, like, car and pickup and stuff, so it's hard for me to, like, I get emotionally attached to these stupid pieces of metal. But no, we need to get this thing sold. It's the Sport Mod deal for us right now, I think, has come to a close. So I'd really like to sell this thing and go find something else. But yeah, it's still for sale. You know, it was a consistent car. I mean, we ran consistent enough and ran enough nights with the old girl to win the state points title. And I know that doesn't mean we're the fastest car. It's far from it some nights, but it was a consistent car, and it'll be good for somebody to start in and turn some laps in. And but no, it needs to get sold. It's time to go do something different. So,
any secrets?
Lawnmower
racing, Chris says. Yeah. So, yep. Any secrets? Anything you can tell us about this new car, or is it still kind of all up in the air? You don't really want anyone to know. I know there's superstitions about that kind of stuff. Or are you just waiting to see, or do you already have a new chassis?
You know, no, I have nothing. Nothing. You know, I haven't paid the down payment on anything yet. I got to get this thing sold to make the racing budget work for a new car. Yet, it'll be something used. You know, whether it's a Rage, a Razor, a GRC, it'll be something of those. Those three and is what I've been looking at. It'll be a used car. We just got to find something decent used in that area and go from there. So no new car lined up. No secrets. I can't make any big announcements for you, Sam. Yeah, sprint car. Yeah, no, that's not our deal either. Yeah, I don't know the sprint car thing. I listened to last week's podcast.
Hey, it can happen.
Did a good job.
Hey, all I'm gonna say is it can happen, and I think that'd be pretty cool.
It will
cool.
not happen.
Why not?
No. Well, Sam, here's the deal.
Oh God.
And it's kind of the reason that I'm selling the sport mod is as a kid, I always wanted to drive an A mod. That's when I grew up, I wanted to be an A mod driver. So that's reason number one. I grew up working on my Uncle Troy's car, hanging around with him and guys like Sean Stan. I want to be a mod driver. Time to go do that. The sprint car thing, my grandma Barb, who has been the backbone of our race team forever.
Love grandma Barb.
Yeah, for 50, 60 years, she's been coming to races, Fluff. And she said she was around for the first era of sprint cars, okay? And my grandpa Harry got in a really bad wreck. So the sprint car thing, no go. And then my wife, who is, she's not at the track all the time, and she catches slack of that, and I give her a bad time because she's bad luck. But my wife will let me do anything. She's okay with this AMOD deal, spending money, chasing whatever. She said no to sprint car racing.
So even if it's a wingless sprint car?
I will not be a sprint car.
Even if it's a wingless sprint car?
Especially a wingless car. Yeah. Grandma Barb said no. And so there's some very important women in my life. My grandma said no. My mother, no. My wife, no. And my crew chief, Mariah, she said no. So there's four no's there. That I can't overvote those guys. So
how will we, so I'll never get the race that I really want though. That's what you're telling me.
You can race mine for $7,500. I'll deliver it tomorrow, Sam.
Chris.
Sam, it's already got the S on the number.
Ooh.
Yes. It's already ready.
Chris, do you think I can make that kind of step though, and that kind of commitment? You've already only gave me. Put me in a stock car first, then you bumped me down to a hobby. Then you said, no, you probably wouldn't even be getting a hobby. We should give you an enduro car. So I'm kind of backtracking. So I don't know if I can even go into a sport mod. I mean, you're telling me I'm backtracking at this point.
Well, are we going to do this the fun way? Or are we going to do this realistically? I mean, we could be smart about it, start you an enduro car, let you bang some fenders and move our way up. Or we could just go big and jump right in. Whatever you want to do. I'm game for either of it.
They don't call me the Slammin' Sam for no reason. Thought you knew that, Chris.
I know. We've been over this. That's not a good name in that racing.
Okay, I got to ask Isaac. Isaac, if you're in, let's say we're in row three, you're on the inside, I'm on the outside, and you hear that the 8 machine of Sam Slammin' Smith is parked right next to you. How do you feel? Like, if you hear that, that's the guy's name, how are you feeling about that one?
I'd probably feel better than some of the guys I got right up beside.
Ooh, I like it. We're not going to, we could dive into that. I mean, there is some people
there. We're just not going to.
You can send me the text. I'll say the names. But, I mean, like you said, you heard last week, right? There was a couple of jabs thrown. And that's what it's all about, right? It gives us a chance to look at the race season that we just walked away from. It gives us a chance to talk about the future race season and something to laugh at during the week when we're in the shop. Because you got to think, there's some guys that are still racing. I know I'm going to say his name, Rob Stenvold. He's getting ready to go down to Vegas to go race. Got a new car. Thing looks beautiful. Shout out to his crew chief, his son, Evan, who, I mean,
Grandpa Rob.
That car does not get moved an inch unless Evan okays it. But I mean, that's what it takes, right? Like you're saying, you got four women that are telling you absolutely not. We'll respect you and we'll support you 100% with whatever you do. But there is also, there is also that situation.
You know who the first, going back to Rob Stenvold and Evan, you know who the first car I seen Evan actually work on?
Whose is that?
Was my enduro car.
Yes,
I've got pictures somewhere of Rob's kids when he first started the transmission shop with Cal Neerham and those guys. And I had an enduro car, and they let me build it in their shop. I got pictures of, like, Shaylin was still in a car seat. Evan was maybe 2 or 3, and he's like just ripping things out of my enduro car. And like Taylor and Christina, all them, they couldn't have been, I don't know, maybe they were 7 or 8 at the time. I don't know the exact age. They were all little kids. Now they're all adults and they're having kids of their own. And it makes me feel like an old man. You guys are sitting here crying about 30. I miss 30.
Was Rob Hart on that enduro car too?
He really was.
Oh,
that
man.
Made him decide to get his Rob, hobby stock. Pfeiffer built his first hobby stock, and right out of the chute, he got the role as Rob nickname.
Destroyed it, didn't he? Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Rob, thanks for all the help at Bullet Transmission over the years. He's been really good to me.
Yes.
But he's also extremely fun to make fun of. So.
Oh, he's oh. And he's a good sport about it. I keep trying to get Rob on here. Rob says no, unless it's an after. What did he say? It's an after 6:30 or 7:30 after Bullet Transmission on a Friday night. That way, good old Rito can get up there. And I think that'll really be good to get Reed and Fluff. Get Reed and Fluff going on a good podcast.
Does it have to be censored, uncensored? Because there's a fine line.
No.
See,
that's the thing.
I heard the LeBron argument last week, and I actually got to hear some of it live. So that was gold, by the way. And that would be like a drop in the hat compared to the stories that would get told on the Rob Stenvall podcast. So
this is the only rule on here to know is that smashing the Lau paddle saves lives. The paddle. But no, there's no rules on this podcast. You can say what you want. I mean, this is honestly, it's for the racers. I mean, we know how you guys talk in the pits. We know what you guys go through on the week basis, trying to get everything done and trying to, you know, get the cars going and whatnot. So no, there is no rules to this. I mean, it's wide open. It's in that groove. So, I mean,
if I'm switching classes, then we could have some really good story time. Because if I'm switching classes, I might not see those guys again. So,
I mean, hey, like I said, there, you know, shit happens, you know, and if people are getting upset about it, it really does not matter. ALS Teca Mexican Food, located here in Minot, North Dakota, on the north side. If you want the best and authentic Mexican food located in Minot, North Dakota, please check out the gang up at ALS Teca Mexican Food, located right near the Minot International Airport. Go up there, try one of the burritos, and I guarantee you, you will not leave hungry. The best and authentic Mexican food here in Minot, North Dakota, again, that is ALS Teca, for all your dine-in and dine-out needs. So no rules, no bards hold or anything like that. So Fluff, it's about that time now where we really dig in. You know, there's already been one or two shots that have been fired. So now we're starting to get into the good stuff. I mean, what do you got for Isaac? I know there's a topic that you really want to talk about because you kind of put the blame on me last weekend for that one when we talked about that issue. So I know you want to ask Isaac this question.
Which one are we talking about?
Well, you told me last week that I've got the biggest head and I'm going to need a sprint car to get into this one. And if I recall, there was a Facebook post.
Hold on now. This deal with Isaac, it isn't like Isaac has a huge ego. It's just the Sondrel family is legendary in racing, okay? But there's only one who thinks he's important. And he's on this podcast.
I can't argue that.
Well, I mean, I had to, you guys don't realize, you know, there's a certain day that we usually record these. We had to kind of cater our schedule to this one man because, you know, and
Fluffy asked for the time to get moved back.
Exactly.
I can't believe it. He's always asleep. Like in the group chat, he's asleep. He never answers past 9 o'clock.
No,
not happening.
Trust me, Isaac. When he said, "Can we move it back tonight?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, he's definitely gonna flake out tonight. He's gonna come up with some. Oh, we had to lay concrete so late and this." And then I looked out the window and I saw it rain, and I'm like, "Oh, you ain't got no excuse tonight." So
that didn't stop us. I got home at 8:40.
Oh my gosh! Look, see, and Isaac.
That was just a drizzle. That was nothing.
And Isaac, he always wants to put the blame on someone else and say, you know, we have to be the center of attention.
Well. But, I texted him earlier asking if, like, if I needed a link or whatever. I thought you were pulling a trick. I mean, you're going to actually have somebody else on the podcast tonight. You're just getting my hopes up. So I was ready for the worst case scenario.
Come on. You don't have to worry about with me. I am a man of my word. If I say you're going to be on, but I did, Isaac, I can attest because I know tomorrow there's going to be a guy from A1 Evans that gives me a phone call. On Thursday, he's going to give me a phone call and he's going to be like, you really switched this and you got to push me back because you wanted Isaac on. Well, you know, I promised Isaac first that I let him come on before Reed. So I'm going to publicly say this for, you know, Reed's feelings, and he's going to feel special. This 2 weeks in a row, we're now talking about him. I'm sorry, Reed, you will be next on the podcast, but
Reed is saying somebody seen or did something that they actually didn't.
Well, I kind of think now, and we're going to stop picking on him, but, you know, after you did, you know, give him those basketball calls and then, you know, LeBron James and my team, the Lakers, I don't know if LeBron James is on that team, but not a fan of his at all. But, you know, they did win a championship last night. So, you know, all those basketball calls.
Well, I wouldn't even count that.
All those basketball calls, he probably feels that it's probably time for him to, you know, one of them to go his way.
Make sure you ask Reed how long his naps usually take.
Oh, man. Shots fire. Okay, this is enough of picking on Reed Hansen on the podcast, because now he's going to hate me.
I mean, shout out to A1 Evans. Number one Evans. Number two business.
14-H racing. I was worried about him, so I texted, Reed, where are you tonight? What's the deal? Is something wrong with your car? No, man. Took a nap, fell asleep, just woke up. Not going to make it tonight. I'm like,
okay.
I've done a lot of things, man. That's gold.
Since you said that, I got to ask, did you hear about what Reed Hansen did taking his car down with Smalls, parked it? What about that? I mean.
Yeah. Well, we got the Snapchat, and we were like, it didn't really make sense. And then, okay, we went flying down I-29, and then the meme started happening, and it was a Reed Hansen story. Me either, but.
I was like, man, I mean, when he sent me that on Snapchat, and he goes, oh, Slam and Sam, you're not going to believe this, but we just parked it. And I'm like, what? So I reply right away, what did you do? Oh, I'm going to let him tell the rest of that story here on the podcast, but man.
Yeah, sure.
So I saw the Facebook post tonight or earlier today, Isaac. Congratulations to your sister, and she's getting married and everything. But Woo-hoo! now you're being told you can't be the center of attention at the wedding. What's going on with that?
So apparently in my family, I'm the center of attention, and it's self-proclaimed and self-assumed, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. It's just, you know, I'm the oldest, so I've always looked out for my sisters and whatnot. And
yeah, they take care of you.
Yeah, they do. It's a lot of work. I like being the center of attention, but like Fluffy said, like, I don't, only in my family, I really hate talking about any self-accomplishment. I hate that stuff. Like, that ain't my deal. It's not an ego.
It's not an ego thing. Like, Isaac thinks he's the best sounder in the world. It's just like, okay, if Grandma Barb's making a certain type of cookie, we're having Isaac's favorite cookie because none of the rest of us matter.
No, that's actually true.
It's not you're better than everyone. It's just you get your way.
I'm not really a diva outside of my family, or like an ego outside of the but inside I'm the favorite, and I make sure it's known. So
he's the golden goose.
Hey, we were in Dickinson for the banquet, and Grandma made a bunch of bars, but we got a blizzard. It was a terrible weekend, but we made it down for the banquet, and then Fluffy and Jake drove down, and it was a good time. But Grandma made bars, and it wasn't my favorite bar, and Fluffy chewed my ever loving ass for being ungrateful. But Fluffy loved them, so it was all good. So him and Jake were eating them in the hot tub, hungover,
and Isaac's mom looked at me and said, quit wasting your breath. Isaac's always going to get what he wants. I couldn't believe his mom said that.
Yeah. After 30 years, they gave up on me. So,
Fluff, I just think it's really that you're jealous. I think that's what it's about. Wow. You're jealous is that Isaac gets what he wants.
There's no doubt. I'm slowly working my way into the Sandro family.
Oh, for sure. Like,
now I call grandma, grandma, mom.
Yeah. On Sundays now, it's like, what would Eric like? What would Fluffy like? What kind of treats should I bring for Fluffy and those guys? It's not, they're kind of, yeah, they're taking me out of my own circle, man.
We're rubbing in on Isaac's little happy place there. Yep. We're going to steal some of this thunder.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's totally fine, right? Because that's what we love about going down to the tracks. And that's what we love about doing what we do, is because we meet friends and then all of a sudden those friends become family. You know, like Rob and them. I mean, there's been many a days I go up there for lunch, or, you know, if I have a day off, I go up there for breakfast and we'll sit around and have breakfast burritos together. Sorry, Fluff. Don't get mad at me that I've never brought you anything.
Yeah. Well, where are these deliveries? Jeez.
The only thing that I think I can bring you, Fluff, would be my son, so he could drive the excavators and everything else you guys got out there. The kid loves them. So if you say I can do that, that's a done deal.
When Sam asked that question earlier about the quarantine, and honestly, the normalcy of seeing you guys, like seeing Sam and Fluff, and, you know, I hate to say this, that I actually missed Eric when he was retired for part of the year. Like, you miss seeing those idiots that you get accustomed to. You get sick of them, but you miss seeing them. You know, that's just how it is. You know, like I don't really want to see Jake and his goats, but I end up, you know, like, you miss those guys. You miss seeing Reed Hanson stumble across the pits with a stupid story to tell. Like,
we've got to talk about that. Wait a minute. We've got to talk about those goats. Mm-hmm. So I didn't believe that the guy was going to bring some goats down to the track, to the pits, let alone Motor Magic. Walk down to the pits. There's some goddamn goats. Some goddamn...
Been going to races for 30-plus years.
Yep.
Never all been. Across this country. First time I've ever seen goats in a pit stall.
And, I mean, it's there, like, goats. Like, for you people that do not understand what we're saying right now, they were actually goats. Goat gruff. Like, goats.
They're cute little things, man. They're fun.
Yeah, until they're eating your patio furniture and they're kicking your car. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, and that's the thing. So then, Isaac, I don't know. Is this a love-hate relationship you got going on with Eric? Is this, I mean, what's the deal with this? I mean, I've seen it for a while, never really commented, didn't know if it was like a man crush one way. I know Fluff's got a huge man crush on him. I think he dumped Steven to get with someone that was a little younger.
That's Dallas. Dallas has a crush on Eric.
You cannot be bringing the redhead into this. He had nothing to do with it.
But he got no soul. No soul. It doesn't matter. So
no matter.
So is that why he gave up his car, so he could be closer to Eric's car, or what was that about?
I wonder what was discussed, wasn't it? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, Eric. It's like being married. It's frustrating, but there's some good moments, I guess. So it's kind of like, that's how I describe
the fact that we're even talking about him on this podcast is doing nothing but fueling his ego.
Oh, I know. He texted us earlier and he's like, how much you guys can talk about me? I was like, well, it's inevitable. It's going to get brought up. So
what were you saying about him? Who's Eric's favorite driver?
Eric's favorite driver is Eric Lodgeslager. So
yeah, I think, and I didn't know that Eric actually listened to my podcast. So that's even better. I can take a shot at him. Hopefully he doesn't pull me over, but,
No.
I think Eric has a little bit of Larry McFall in him.
Is that why those two battle so much, you think? They're too much alike?
It's not that, and don't take this the wrong way. This podcast has really gone the wrong way. We were supposed to talk about Isaac and the good things that Isaac is doing, and you guys are just bringing out the worst in me tonight. But we all need these kind
of... people want to hear, Sam.
Is it really? I hope it is.
People want the inside scoop. They want the excitement in the pits.
All right, so
they care about statistics and fastest laps and track conditions. They care about who's bitching about who and who's mad at who and who hates who.
So we should just change this to not in the groove, but, you know, the shit hours. We can do that. But anywho, and the only reason why I say Eric Lodgeslager is a little bit like Larry McFall, hopefully I don't get thrown in the slammer for this one, but is I've heard that, you know, from a couple of people that, because, you know, Larry is, he wants to thank himself for getting out of bed. Larry wants to thank himself for making him a sandwich and driving him to the track. And Larry would like to thank himself for walking up all the stairs, you know, to in the grandstands or, you know, opening the door for himself at the Mesa Arena so he can get in the Zamboni. So, and Eric, you know, I've kind of heard that a little bit about him. I'm sorry, bud, if you're listening to this, you know, hey, if I get pulled over in the next couple of days, you guys now know why if you see a picture of the Slam and Sam in the Slammer.
Eric, maybe not quite as bad as Larry. He'll thank the other people that help him get there, but lastly and most importantly, he's going to thank himself over the other people.
Hey.
He'll have a little side note saying, yeah, so-and-so and so-and-so, they were there for me, but without me driving it, it would have been a piece of crap, so it don't matter.
Hey, yep. I mean, you got to thank your star player sometimes. Some people don't like your star player, but sometimes you just got to thank them. So since we are going to reel this podcast back in, since we've kind of gone down the deep end with these two Yang Who's on here, good friends of mine, Isaac and Chris Ruhr. Nope, but I do have
Ride
to ask.
Ride it out.
I do have to ask you this question here. It's one that I do want to talk about. What is it like for you to battle against people like Eric, since we've already been talking to him, to battle against, Conway when he shows up? Then you had Hollywood. Supposedly, this was supposed to be his last ride, but I think he jumped back on that train. He can't get enough of it. But then, you know, having a mentor in the Lawsons, having that knowledge, people that have been around the sport, and even the people that are in your pit, what is it like for you to have that kind of, you know, history of people that have been around, people that know the name, and now with you, does it put an added pressure? Or do you think it's easier when you show up to the track?
Both. I think pressure is a privilege. You know, I think to be in that situation, it means you've done some things right, you know, in your career. And fortunately, I had some people lay some really good groundwork for me. And, you know, my Grandpa Harry's in the Hall of Fame up there. My step-grandpa Dick's up there. My Grandma Barb was nominated for the Hall of Fame, you know, and she should get in at some point. I believe that. She's been around forever and helped the sport immensely, especially from a small town of Turtle Lake. And, you know, then working with my Uncle Troy for all those years and Sean Strand and those dudes, I got good mentors. So it was easy. So that, you know, like when I say pressure is a privilege, like I feel it sometimes because when you got grandpas in the Hall of Fame and uncle that was really good and guys you worked with that are really good. And then like you talk about guys you raced with, the Eric Lautenschlagers, the Robbie Conways, the Chase Conways, Kelly, there's so many guys in our class, Hooker, Biela, Roselli. Every night it's tough with those guys. They're so damn fast that it kind of has put me in a position now where, you know, we've had some good runs. We've won some championships and whatnot. And it feels like it put me in a position where I'm ready to go and move up, you know. And it, like with my deal, I'm always going to be a little bit under budgeted. That's just how we've always done it. We kind of do it the hard way here, with our racing team. And that's just kind of how we grew up. And that's just, you know, that's kind of how we roll. And so racing against those guys and having those mentors that I've had, It feels like it's prepared you. This 4-mile class at NODAC and around the state right now, even going east, there's dudes in it. There's no lack of talent. It's not an entry class. That's BS that anybody says this is an entry class. It's not. There's dudes with a ton of laps, a ton of experience, and it makes guys better. I would say that when guys from our class travel out of state, they do well. Biela goes down to Arizona, runs well. You know, Luke Crow, he dominates the Dickinson. He goes down to Vegas, he does well. You know, like, I mean, when guys travel, they do well. It's a no-brainer. We have, you show up at NODAC and run in the top 10 in a sport mod, I feel like it's prepared me to go and battle a top 10 of an A mod. There's no lack of talent in the classes. And to be honest, the budget deal in the sport mod class has expanded for a lot of guys. And there's a lot of nice iron in the sport mod class. And I think that's helped prepare us too. So I guess it's kind of a combination, all those things. And, you know, part of me feels like racing against those guys has helped me get ready. And now, you know, we got to go try to, you know, be fast enough to beat the Sean Strands and the Marlins and the Hellebust and Trav Hagans and the Jason Wallas. And, you know, you want to be in the same conversation. I'm not saying I'll ever be as good as any of those guys or be as fast as any of those guys. It's a hell of a lot of work to even get in the same conversation. But if I can get in that conversation, that's the goal. So,
you know, one thing I can say about you, Isaac, and you're not giving yourself enough credit.
Here goes everybody. Listen up. Chris Ruhr is now sucking up.
Well, I don't have to suck up to Isaac. He's one of my good friends. And if you can't make fun of your friends, who can you make fun of? track. But the fact that no matter what class, if you're going A-mod racing or World Outlaw late model racing, I know for a fact you'll have all the respect to your competitors already, because there's no one else in the state that is clean a racer and nice a racer as a guy as you. I mean, if you break down, people would throw parts at you, not alone just try to help turn wrenches and get you back out there. And from knowing maybe you don't have the wins and stuff that you hope you had at this point, but just your constant always being in the talk and always being up front makes you a contender no matter what, even though if you don't think you are. And from someone who knew both of your grandpas, the fact that guys are proud to race with you and say your name means, you know, more than winning any championship would. From knowing your grandpas, I know they look down on you smiling no matter what you want to think. You might not take as much credit as you deserve, but in all honesty, you're one of the top-notch racers. I mean, you'll never be as good as Eric Lautenschlager if you ask him, but other than that, you're pretty good.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Fluff, man. It's just, I grew up in a system that to do things the right way, and that's all. Like you said, I think I've got 12 career wins or whatever and a couple championships, and some people look at that and go, God, in 8 years, that's it. And to me, if people remember me for what my stats were, I effed up along the way. That's the truth. I mean, my grandpa Harry is remembered for being Harry Kittler. That's more important to me. I do things the right way, and the rest of the shit will take care of itself. So I appreciate that, Fluff, man. I do.
Yeah, I can't tell you a lot of how many races Harry Kittler won or Dick Schultz won, but I can tell you fun stories about both of them. Yeah, they were that kind of guy.
And just and leaving an impression on other racers, you know, and not like just helping. I mean, you know, my grandpa Harry built so many cars for other guys, and like it spurred the Mike Tomlinson era, which led to all of his kids racing, his kids starting his own, you know, Miles starting the wingless sprints. The impact that guys like him left, the impact like Dick Schultz left, all those motors, like Dick won like 300 and some features and a dozen championships, but even the motors he built and the ideas and the connections he left, you know. And this is earlier this summer, Mike Tomlinson won a feature down in Dickinson. I've known Mike since I was a kid. He's also an idol. I mean, Mike back in the 90s won everything there was to win, excuse me. But Marlon Seidler had left a post of Mike, you know, on Mike's Facebook, how much fun it was, you know, to learn from him and Harry Kittler. And Marlon Seidler has won everything there is to win. So for him to refer back to Harry Kittler, who's been gone for 18, 19 years now, that's who I hope to be someday. That's the God honest truth.
Yeah, I mean, people like your grandparents, they help big names that nobody even knows of. I mean, Donnie Schatz wouldn't be a World Outlaw legend if it wasn't for your grandparents helping Danny and getting him involved in the sport, right, and moving things along.
And Hank Albers,
just
Donnie.
How that would change. Yeah.
Donnie Mack, you know, Donnie Mack is a Knoxville Hall of Famer, and him and Grandpa used to run around together. You know, that's crazy. It's
just legendary names in dirt racing.
For sure. And for guys like Fluffy and I, the history of this sport is really important. And that's one question I was going to ask you and Sam tonight. And I, you know, I don't know much about the drag racing. Sam's kind of come into our world. I haven't gotten into his much, but Fluffy and I are kind of like historians. We've grown up, we love it. And I was going to ask you guys what you think. I'm a little worried about the state of racing, which way it's going, not social media stuff and whatever. It just, you look at car counts, and not even the car count itself is what's the average age of that car count. Okay. You know, why we're not getting a lot of young people in this sport. Is it because of budgets? Is it because of the hard work? Is it because it's so hard to beat the old guys? There's a whole lot of things there. You look at a Nodak Speedway, a club run organization, compared to a Grand Forks or a Fargo where they're promoted. And it seems like it's leaning towards promoted races or the people that are owners of those racetracks are having an easier time in the club run organizations because of the volunteerism. It's hard to keep getting volunteers after all these years of all these families doing it. And that's what, at some point tonight, I wanted to pick your guys' brains about that. And maybe it's the same way with drag racing, is I'm worried about the state of racing because I have the history background. Fluffy has the history background. How many guys come to the racetrack and have no freaking clue about any of the history? And I thought during the oil field boom, that was really big. We've had so many guys that came in that were a flash in the pan year two, and they're fast and furious, and now they're gone. But like, you look at the history side of things, we've been here forever, and I hope that we can have that. Somebody's having this conversation in 40, 50 years, but I'm kind of worried about some of that stuff.
Yeah, Fluff, I'll let you. I've got a notepad of stuff that I've thought about for different tracks. And, you know, I'm going to try and make both of the board meetings to the local tracks here around me, Williston and Minot, hopefully try to get on the board and help out a little bit. But, Fluff, I'll let you answer that question first.
Oh, I'm with Isaac. I do fear for the future of this sport. But I also look past, like, okay, yeah, there's not a lot of people that have a lot of history in it and a lot of knowing what happened to racing, but I think there are people that want to learn it. There is a little bit of gap, say, the generation right below us, but I feel like us and our children, and look at people like Stephen Pfeiffer and, you know, I'm thinking other kids, but these slingshot kids that are coming up. And there's tons of go-karts around the state, too. Luke's got his son running one down now by Dickinson. You know, Sladen in his slingshot. I know there's tons of those Canadian kids that are all about this. I think there might be a little gap here, but that generation is what's going to grow this sport. And I'm hoping we can just be the old guys that sit back and watch and cheer those kids on and help them any way they can.
Yeah, I mean, even the Brandon Beeters kids running around, and it's
right.
We need all of that. We need all of it. We need all those kids involved.
Just a touch light on Brandon. Sorry to cut you off there. Just a touch light on Brandon's kids and his family. There's been multiple posts that I've seen Brandon post out towards the end of the year. Peyton, his daughter, and I don't mean to speak of his kids because all the stuff that's going on in the world right now, but his daughter doing that stuff with all the trophies, putting the stickers on each one of them. And then his son. It gives me goosebumps, because how does a kid that young say, "Dad, I want to flag these races," goes up there, the start of this year, starts going up there with his dad, and during the tour and during the end of the year, no, not during the tour, but the end of the year, the kid was flagging the races on his own. I looked up during one of the features and said, this is unreal. Brandon's just standing there. I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but that was huge for me.
It's good to see. Yeah, I just hope we can bridge that gap. It's important to me that we do. I would say that's more important than anything else I accomplish. Is we got to make sure that we got the next generation going. And, you know, like Fife's kids going, and they're going to be gung-ho. I mean, the kid already is. You know, it's good to see that. You kind of giggle because when I was a kid growing up, I got to watch how, you know, kind of wild and crazy Steve was, you know, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be good for him that he's going to have to go through it, you know, but it's good for a lot of those guys, you know. And I don't know. Hopefully we can bridge that gap. We have to, you know, I look at the national stage, like the World of Outlaws got a load of young talent. The late model series has a load of young talent, you know, nationally, the AMOD class has a load of young talent. So hopefully that talent helps the next groups keep going, you know? So,
and, you know, I think both, you know, are all motorsports in general, drag racing, circle track racing, the last, say, 10 years, it's been kind of in a lull, a downside, you know. But now look at the things that are making it come bigger. Like all these internet races that are, you know, Darn TV and IMCA TV. And look at things that are bringing drag racing back into, like, Street Outlaws, stuff like that. I mean, before, people didn't care about it, are now wanting to know if there's a track in their town, wanting to know what it's about. I mean, little steps like that, I think the next 10 years, we're going to be going up instead of down, which is good for every side of motorsports. I mean, even the two cycle stuff, motocross, same way. People are getting excited about that because it's in movies, TVs. People are getting excited about it.
All right, Chris. So I'm gonna break it down for you right here. And Isaac, I know you watched this on MTV. What was that kid's name who had his name tattooed? He was a motorcycle rider. He had his name tattooed across the back of his Ryan Scheckler.
Yeah.
That was during our age group, right? If it wasn't Fast and the Furious, or if it wasn't him on TV, there was not, what else was there to watch for us? You know, that's what every kid wanted, a 16 speed transmission with NOS that blew the floorboards out of your car. I mean, that's what we grew up on. Those are the things, you know, we didn't have the movies and everything else like all these people did. And then they came out with Gran Turismo and all that. So then we had steering wheel games and different things like that. that was a, to me, you know, being a 90s kid, that's the last big push we've had as drag racers, as racers, autocross, whatever you want to call it. But I can tell you right here, in the last 5 years, you guys can't see them, I've got three notebooks. I just held up three notebooks. I don't know if you guys can see those. But those are three notebooks of racing ideas, just Mad Bro Motorsports ideas, different things, events that even for the IMCA racing that I still don't, I know enough to get by, but I still don't know enough of it, I think, about. But I can say what I think with the circle track racing. For me, late model racing and World of Outlaws, it's a show. It is a show. Yeah. I mean, they're, you know what I mean? Like, when you go...
On the national spectrum,
yeah,
it's climbing. I mean it's the NASCAR ratings are dropping, and the World of Outlaws late models, the World of Outlaws, all those, the ratings are picking up on those when they get on TV. When we had that iRacing deal during the quarantine and went back-to-back, it's gaining attention. And I think with some of the national pushback on all the national pro sports right now, some of the blue blood sports like us, I think it's our time to kind of, hey, come.
This oh yeah. Normal. Grassroots racers, your race fans are now coming back to their local stuff because they're getting in, and I don't like to talk whatever you believe in, because everybody's allowed to have their own freaking opinion. And if we agree, we agree. If we disagree, then we fight about it and we get the hell over it. That's all I'm going to say about that. But people are getting sick of things being forced down their throat, so now they're going back to it. But a huge part of that is when you have a NASCAR driver stepping into cars that he hasn't driven before, and he's now won, what, 14, 15 different races? I mean, when you can step out of one class and go and dominate another class like that, that just shows, like, hey, maybe you don't have to be a superstar or a freak to do this. But... one of the racers said it when I interviewed him before. He said, and Alex Lofton, I'll say his name. He said, people like to see the high-flying, crazy things, right? So speaking of, like, motocross, kids love those little toys. You know, when you can go and get a Gravedigger, you know, little cart for your kid, and he can play around with that. Then he sees Gravedigger on the... on the TV, and Gravedigger's got his own theme music, and he's got clothes and t-shirts. Yep. It puts on a show. It's like going to the freaking circus.
You know, the perfect example of that, and also supports our whole thing that dirt racing is growing, is look in the last, 4 or 5 years, they started doing the Prelude, which was NASCAR drivers driving late models. And it was a huge deal. It became a national TV thing they had to do every year. Well, then they decided to up that, and they put the Craftsman trucks, you know, or Camping World trucks are called that one, dirt. Now, this year, next year, NASCAR is seeing that dirt is popular and people want to see it. Now we're putting dirt on Bristol, and we're going to have the NASCAR big guys on dirt on Bristol.
I guarantee you
there's a World Outlaw show at that time, and if they don't have one at the same time, someone's just missing a huge marketing opportunity there.
Exactly.
See, they did that in the late 90s and the early 2000s, and it was unreal.
Well, just even look at out west in California, Gio Selzy and Dominic Selzy, their dad, huge NHRA legend, you know, I can't remember his name at the time right now, but Gio and Dominic, young kids, they went World of Outlaw racing now, you know, they're sprint car guys, you know, and their dad says he could never do what they did. They say he could never do what their dad is. So I think some of the cross, you know, like even Ron Capps runs the Prelude to the Dream a couple years ago, you know, like there's a cross there, you know, talent's talent. You know, Kyle Larson's won 41 races this year. Talent's talent. So I think it's cool that I think because, you know, like the NHR, I think the ratings for that have tweaked up now a little bit too, you know, and I think they've had to deal with some of this quarantine schedule stuff too. And I got to watch a while back they were on, you know, in the middle of June there or whatever. But I think the talent is jumping from across. And I think it's really good. Oh. I think it used to be like NASCAR guys hated dirt racing. When these dirt guys, you know, when the Gordon era, the Tony Stewarts, they weren't loved, you know, they didn't. The dirt track guys loved it, but everybody else did it. Now it's kind of a cross talent deal that we're seeing, and I think it's really good for all of motorsports.
Yeah, we're seeing
Tony Stewart's bringing back the kind of what used to be the IROC series.
Yeah,
and he's going to do
SRX. Yeah,
his plan. The last I heard on the internet is that he wants to do different events in each class, like a NASCAR race, a dirt track race, an NHRA drag race. with crossbreeding everybody, putting World Outlaw guys next to NASCAR guys, next to NHRA guys. And honestly, I think that's going to be your highest ratings in motorsports. I want to watch it just hearing about it.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, the way I think about it, right? People can call the Street Outlaw guys Skittles eating, whatever you want to call them. But I can tell you that we've all sat next to that TV on Monday night and we're like, what's going to happen? Right. I mean, it's one of those things. It takes it. As soon as you can take the money, and this answers one of your other questions, when you take the money out of it, so, you know, you guys, and granted, unless you're a big name racer, drag racers, we do not get the sponsorships. I know Chris and I have had this conversation. We do not get the sponsorship that you guys get. Not here in North Dakota, you know. But when you take the money out of it, and you guys definitely have more, you can see your car more than what you see ours, right? Granted, some nights you probably wouldn't want to take it and put it in a mall show. But then at the same sense, I'm going to answer another question, and this is just being me being a media person and me getting into the promotional role of it. I think racetracks that are ran as a business are 100% better off than racetracks that are ran as a club. And that's bad for me to say, like I said, with wanting to, you know, get involved with both of these racetracks, because and this is me personally, I'll just say it. When you get a club together, you have to remember that it's a group of people. You guys, this person can say this, this person can say that. When you have a promoter who he knows that's the only, he or she may know that that's their only way of maybe paying their bills that month, or that's their only income if they're only tied to one track, I think that you have to take it a step further. Like I personally, like I look at my Facebook post and my Instagram post as if I'm doing this as, you know, yes, I have a regular 9-to-5, but you put your heart and soul into something that you truly care about, and that brings in your, you know, your paycheck. So do I agree with it being 100% on one person? No, but there's so much more that goes into it. There's so many more decisions that are probably made, and you don't want to be that fly on the wall that's like, hey, everyone agrees with it, but I don't, because now that could, it's like living with your best friend, not the person you're married to, but in college, hey, we're best friends, let's get an apartment together, right? I mean, how many friendships have you seen or heard about that are now ruined because you've got that clash? So to me, it has to be ran as a business, because that's how you guys are taking it. You guys are coming out, you guys are spending your own money. So when something gets wrecked, and Chris, I'm sorry, and you know, the track didn't get worked on that week because there was other stuff going on, well, guess what? That's when you're going to start getting those Facebook posts, and you're going to start getting the different things like that. And then a lot of people don't want to volunteer, and they only want to, when you ask to volunteer, you only want to give so much. So giving your whole weekend to pick rocks or to tear the track down or put the track back up, that shit gets old. I mean, when you're volunteering, it's one thing, but when you're getting paid, and if you are getting paid, you have to step up to the plate. If not, then that job's going to be taken by someone else. I mean,
yeah, you know, you brought it up a couple of times tonight about, you know, me and Lindsay Lawson's relationship, and not only what Lindsay has done for us in the pits and you know, the wisdom there, but Lindsay's been around the races since, like you said, like since he was zero. He's been around for 60 years, so he's seen this ebb and flow. He's been a vice president. He's seen it all. We've had a lot of conversations about this up and down the highway. That's what you talk about on the way back and forth to the races, other than setting up the car and different stuff you want to try, kind of what we're talking about now. And NODAC is the longest club-run organization racetrack in the country.
I think they've made a turn. I can say I've been in North Dakota for 10 years. I've been going to the races probably for six. I probably say, you know, 5 or 6 years. And I can see the turn as someone from the outside looking in, and now being, I felt like this year, last year and this year, it was kind of a more welcoming feeling for me. You know, people saw me around, and that's what it takes. I think at the end of the day, and this is going to sound wrong, and if the one person that this maybe geared toward, oh, well. When I don't think you can, you have a board. If it's ran as a club, you need to have a board of people, but you have a racer that identifies for each class. You cannot have someone, you know, they're a spokesperson for the class, but they cannot be on the board. Because now it's just like what's happening in Minot. You're taking your personal beliefs and your interest and pushing it in the face. Because your own interest for your car, for your setup, is going to be your priority, not the rest of the people in your class. So that's all I'm going to say about that. If anyone takes it the way they want to, I don't care. I'm just trying to make dirt track racing great again.
Fluffy would agree. I think, and then Lindsay Lawson has explained this to me, the best racetrack boards don't have any racers on it. That's the cold hard truth.
Yeah, you just can't. And
the tough part about our situation is we just don't have enough people. I mean, we've had to lower the number of board members just because you can't get enough people involved.
Yeah. That's why I said I was kind of worried about that. Yeah.
But and it's hard for like someone like me. I'm not on the board. I would love to be, but I just can't give that kind of time. With my career and what to keep my family going.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't devote every week to meetings. I can't devote being there all weekend long. I want to. I'd love to. It just that doesn't work.
But, and then to answer your last question, I know we're rambling on here. We went from joking to everybody, and now we're taking a little bit more serious. But to answer your last question there, how do you get more kids involved? I think, and this is not me sucking up, but what Miles and them did a couple of weeks ago, having kids get into the cars, having kids in the pits. Yeah. I think, you know, at the beginning of the season, you know, and it's the same that I said for the drag racers, we have to have a kids' night. You have to be able to go and, like, back in my hometown in San Diego, California, Friday nights, so we raced Friday nights, Saturday nights, and you could race up to midday or, you know, to like 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sundays if there wasn't a Chargers game, but who cares about the Chargers? But you, Friday nights were for high school kids only. So if you were interested in racing as a high school kid at Qualcomm Stadium, it was called Race Legal, you could take your Honda Civic, right? Everybody had one of those. I had an Acura Integra, you know, like I said, Need for Speed, you know, Fast and the Furious. That's what it was all about. So that's how you get kids involved. The things that, you know, Minot's doing with the, you know, the, what are they called? The four wheel or the little
kid. The power wheel.
Yeah, the power wheels. That's huge. The slingshots. Yeah. Have those, you have to have those kids run more. Yeah. I mean, it's $6,000 minimum for a chassis for one of those things. I mean, think about that, Isaac. You're selling your car right now for $7,500. Turnkey. Yeah. A kid can't even get a chassis right now in one of those or find one of those. Now, in the junior dragster, you know, those kids are starting at, you can start at 6 years old and depending on what sanctioning body you're in. But you can find those cars anywhere from, you know, $2,500. That's going to need a lot of work. And that's just a roller. Or I've seen a lot of turnkey cars here in the last couple of days because I've just been looking for one. But, you know, $3,500 turnkey. So it's like that investment. Now you're looking at safety equipment. Now you're looking at fuel. Now you're looking at this. So it's getting harder and harder. And I think it's getting more expensive. But, you know, that's where you have your sport compacts are coming into play. And that's a great class. What Miles, who we talked to last week, what he's got going on, that's a great class. Yeah. So I don't know. I think there's just a lot that we can do. And we could sit here. I think that's a podcast and a half to talk about, you know, about what we can do to grow our sport to, you know, not only Fluff, you know, going around in circles as his eyes are getting weary there. He's getting tired. I can see it. But
way past my time. I was tired when this started.
But, yeah, I mean, that's what I think it goes to is that we just have to do a couple of more different things to you know, shed light on what it is and whatnot. But like always, we always get to that power hour round, you know, rapid fire questions, but we don't have any rapid fire questions. We've talked about things. We've joked about things. We shed lights on different things of how we think we can make this sport great again. But like always, you know, smashing that loud pedal does save lives. It does, no matter what you say, no matter what you think. So Chris Ruhr, we've already come out of 1 and 2. We're on the back straightaway. You've already got that white flag coming out of 3 and 4. What did you learn today? What do you take out of this episode of In the Groove podcast?
I've learned that Isaac's family makes the best snacks ever, but I already knew that. That the Sondrels are great people, that our sport is going in the right direction. I think it's just going to take more than one season or us talking about its fixes, but it is getting better. And I also think we have the Nodak Banquet this weekend. It's a good time for everyone to get together, hang out, talk racing, have fun. And I think everybody should come at the fairgrounds this Saturday night. What would that be? Was it the 17th, I think it is? Yes.
Yep.
6 o'clock or 5 o'clock social. 6 o'clock is dinner. 7's award, I believe. So, I mean, everyone should come on out to that. It's at the All Saints Arena and have a fun weekend where we can all make fun of each other in person.
I won't be able to make it because I'm going to be raffing some hacky. But please, Isaac, pull out the phone, get some funny video of Chris Ruhr so I have something to use here on the podcast. I love great content. But there you go. Out of 3 and 4, you've made it around. You've taken your checkered flag. So thanks, Fluff, for coming on again tonight.
Absolutely. Hope to.
So, all right, it's just the two of us again, the two S's. So, I mean, what is it like for you? I mean, like I said, just like with Fluff here, you're taking the white flag. You're coming out of 1 and 2. How was this year for you? Your highs, your lows. What do you have to say to anyone that supports you or anything like that?
Yeah, racing is always going to be up and down. Every season's going to be up and down. So it's pretty cool to have. You know, like we said, we won 3 features. We ran competitive a lot of nights. We had a lot of top 5s and top 10s. Only had one mechanical DNF all year. I think that's pretty cool. You know, win the state points title. Like I said, it doesn't mean we're the fastest, but we worked really hard and we were consistent. That's pretty cool to have that on the resume. And I have a lot of people to thank. First off, I want to thank the racetracks. You know, there's a lot of volunteers across the state. We raced at 9 different racetracks this year. There's a lot of people to get. You know, from promoters, the boards, the volunteers, the track prep people, and to guys pumping up the media. What you and Mason do is incredible, man. I appreciate it big time. And you know, to my crew, my sisters, Mariah and Mel, Lindsay Lawson for going up and down the road with me, my grandma and my mom, my wife for letting me chase this stupid dream. She isn't from a racing family, so to do this is pretty cool. And you know, a lot of support from Turtle Lake. I got great sponsors. All my sponsors are incredible. We do this on a small budget, and without them, I couldn't do any of this. And yeah, I just appreciate all of it, and I'm excited for next year. And hopefully, we can move up. And love to be back on the podcast anytime you want, Sam. If you want to talk favorite racetracks or growth of the sport, whatever you need, man. I appreciate you guys, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have fun with you coming on, you know, like I said, talking some jokes, talking some serious stuff. Thanks for the questions and thanks for being a part of this. Like I said, you know, you're moving into a new class. Hopefully you do have that car for sale. So, you know, anyone that wants to jump on board, that's huge for you.
Sure. Call me.
Yep. So if we can find a seller for you, we will try and help you sell that car. But thanks again for coming on, Isaac, and it has been fun. All right, everybody. Like I said, we have taken the white flag. We've already made it out of corner 1 and 2. We're on that back straightaway. So the only things I got for you guys, if you guys have any feedback for us, please go over and email us. As you can see, it's in the THEEEE, in the groove podcast at gmail.com. If you have any great content that you guys think that we need to have on here, especially if it makes fun of Chris Ruhr, aka Fluff, please let us know. Again, we do have t-shirts. They are Make Dirt Track Racing Great Again. Make Dirt Track Racing Great Again t-shirts. If you're interested in those, please let us know. That is brought to you because of the great man Fluff himself. But I am now taking the checkered flag out of 3 and 4. I am ready to go. And until next time. This has been another episode of In the Groove Podcast, brought to you by Mabro Motorsports, LS Tech and Mexican Food, and the good folks over at Outlaw Performance ENT. If you haven't done already, please go over and check out all of our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube, all under outlawperformance.ent.
Till next time, you guys keep smashing that loud pedal.